And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to Move the Sticks. Rhett Lewis in for DJ here with my man, Bucky Brooks. And back for another week with you, Buck. Last week, we were talking quarterbacks and talking about the quarterbacks that I'm going to get a chance to see down at the Manning Passing Academy. You were talking about some of them that you're going to see at the Elite 11. And so, you know, I felt like this week might be a good idea to talk about the evolution of the position that is maybe most affected by the quarterbacks running the league, if you will, and that is the cornerbacks on the other side, which you did some work for recently.
Yeah, and I did, Rhett, it's crazy because corners are viewed so differently now than they have been in the past because the game has changed. The game has become more where it's a very pass-centric league. So everyone is looking for the quote-unquote lockdown corner. The problem is, there are few guys who really have the ability to kind of lock down a side, because when I think about a lockdown or a shutdown corner, you're talking about someone who can play man-to-man, play sticky man-to-man, whether it's press, whether it's off. They do a great job of being able to play without assistance from the safety or underneath droppers, and they are able to really control one side of the field.
Right.
You just don't find many guys who have the skills to be able to do that. And so you can be a premier corner, you can be an elite corner, but not necessarily be a lockdown corner, because sometimes your game is better suited to play in a scheme that is more zone based or required you to do other stuff as opposed to, hey, I got this man, I'm going to lock him down the entire game.
Right, right. Scheme dictates a lot in the cornerback world and how you're perceived and how you're viewed, but so does skill set. Because, you know, if a defensive coordinator has a guy like Jalen Ramsey, like, well, you know, let's let him do what he does best, right? And even if that's not, you know, based out of the main principle of the scheme, but he dictates, his skill set dictates, a greater responsibility. I love your first line as you were ranking the top five corners over on NFL.com right now, the top five lockdown corners, rather. And the first line that you wrote for Jalen Ramsey, who is your number one corner: the most bodacious cover corner in the game. I'm going to be honest with you, Mike. I have not heard the word bodacious in a good long while, but I'm glad you brought it back to the conversation.
Yeah, because he is one of the few guys where his aura, his swagger, his demeanor matches his game. And when we think about defensive backs, it's a great time that we're almost on the edge of the eve of the Olympics playing, because these guys are really decathletes. I had a coach who said they play the hardest position on the field. They're the only guys who go backwards while everyone else is going forwards and playing their position. And so it requires a different level of athleticism, a different mentality. And when I think about Jalen Ramsey, I mean, you talk about a guy who legitimately was a world-class athlete at Florida State. Won the outdoor and indoor long jump championships at Florida State multiple times. And so you're talking about a long, rangy, explosive cornerback. But then he is a guy who has a tenacious spirit to his game and very, very competitive, that he's willing to challenge wide receivers at every turn. I will give the Rams credit under their previous defensive coordinator, Brandon Staley. What he did is he really engaged Jalen Ramsey in a different way. Instead of just putting him out wide, he moved them around and made them the quote-unquote star corner. The star corner would play inside in slot situations, play outside, and depending upon who the Rams were playing, they would deploy Jalen Ramsey differently. And a lot of corners can't play that life where they play outside and inside, because it requires so many different skills. It requires a different mentality to be inside, because then you got run game responsibilities. You have to deal with slot receivers who – have two-way goals with exceptional quickness. You have the big slot receivers like a Michael Thomas that can go outside, so you got to deal with the physicality. Everybody's not built to play in there. And Jalen Ramsey can not only play outside, but he can play inside, and he does it at an exceedingly high level.
Hard to argue with that as the top lockdown corner in the league. I mean, we're in this position, and guys who have this kind of distinction, we're talking about, you know, $20 million players now in the league, and I don't think many people would argue with that worth in what they provide to a defense.
I mean, he's the only defender making $20 million who's not a pass rusher.
Right. Like,
when you think about that, we talk about this game being one where it's always about the pass game. Either you're a quarterback, you're helping the quarterback as a pass catcher or a playmaker, or you're rushing the quarterback, or you find a way to knock down the passes. Jalen Ramsey is at a level where he is deemed to be one of those guys in a special $20 million club because his skill set is so rare and unique, and the way that he plays the game, man, he plays at such a high level. It really alleviates a lot of the pressure on the rest of the team to be able to get it done.
So you've got Jalen Ramsey at number one. I'm interested in the next three kind of feel like they could be
in
on fairly equal footing.
Yeah.
Right. It might come to some surprise that you've got Marlon Humphrey in there at number two. He's a guy that's certainly an ascending player. It feels like Xavier Howard, you know, is a constant contender to lead the league in interceptions. Dude just gets his hand on the ball. You've got him at number three. And then Jaire Alexander has really come on and established himself among the elites in the game.
Yeah, when you rank those guys, you talk to coaches, they'll put them in any order. Some guys like Alexander because Alexander has what we call that shutdown potential, man-to-man, nose-to-nose. He can go and challenge anybody. Does a great job of really challenging receivers or making them work for catches. That is something that is unique. Marlon Humphrey, to me, is really interesting because he plays outside. But when they lost Tavon Young to an injury, he jumped inside and played nickel corner and played it. Man, he played it so well. His instincts, his awareness, his feel for finding the ball and knocking the ball out. 8 forced fumbles. You just don't see guys. I mean, not since Peanut Tillman, when the peanut punch kind of grew to prominence because he has such a knack for getting the ball out. Marlon Humphrey is in that rare air when it comes to knocking it out. And then Xavier Howard, anytime you can turn the ball over, there's a value for that. Xavier Howard does it better than anybody. You think about the interceptions that he's been able to go to the last 3 years. He's been at the top of the charts in terms of picking the ball off. And to do it in a defense that is really man-heavy is rare because when you're playing man-to-man, your back is to the quarterback. So a lot of times you catch the ball late in terms of your eyes picking it up late, whereas in zone, you see it leave his hand. It's easier to get interceptions in zone than it is in man-to-man. For him to continue to be a guy that puts up big numbers as an interceptor, speaks volumes about his instincts, awareness, his technique, more importantly, his ball skills.
Yeah, 22 picks over the last 4 seasons, as you note in your explanation of him there as your number 3 lockdown corner, league high. I mean, you're averaging almost 6 picks a year at that point.
Crazy.
Certainly pretty special. And then Tre'Davious White, you know, kind of breaks the mold a little bit in that he's not as flashy. You know, he's not as outspoken but man, does he get the job done? He is a solid technical corner, it feels like to me. And we talked about that a little bit, about him coming out of LSU.
Yeah, no, he's as refined as you'll find coming out of LSU. And I think he landed in the right spot. When I think about the culture in Buffalo, I think about a blue-collar team that just gets after it. Not a lot of flash, not a lot of pizzazz to the way that they play, but they just win. To me, that is Tre'Davious White to a T. You don't see a lot of extra stuff from him. He just goes to work, does a great job putting his hard hat on, and he challenges receivers just with what I call a very consistent and tough playing style on the perimeter. He's a guy that excels in zone coverage, does a great job of reading and reacting to balls. But if he has to lock up and play man-to-man, he has that. So when you go and you think about LSU corners, we've seen them produce corner after corner after corner to have success in the league.
Yeah.
Normally, those guys are man-to-man corners. Tre'Davious breaks that mold a little bit because he does have the ability to play zone and play off and do some things in space.
So there's a couple of guys that probably feel like they could or should be in that top 5 list. We'll call them honorable mentions. And I think Defensive Player of the Year a couple of years ago, Stephon Gilmore fits that bill. But coming off last year, a little banged up. Didn't see him, you know, the entire year. I don't know when we're going to see him this year. Contract dispute working out there, perhaps, as Mike Giardi's been telling us over on NFL Network. So I put Stephon Gilmore, Denzel Ward, James Bradbury from the New York Giants, Darius Slay from the Eagles, and Marshawn Lattimore from the Saints kind of in that next, like, honorable mention category there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. I think with each of the guys that you mentioned that were just on the outside looking in, I felt like there was a slight dip in their play in 2020. Darius Slay didn't play as well as he had played those previous years up in Detroit. Marshawn Lattimore had some lulls in his play, but is still an elite corner at the position.
Right.
James Bradbury is really, really interesting because, look, when he signed with the New York Giants, some of it is like, hey, Dave Gettleman, right?
He
drafted a guy, he fell in love with him, but then you watch him play in an assistant Patrick Graham has thrown together in New York where they do a bunch of different things. A lot of man-to-man some weeks they're in heavy zone, a lot of changes. He held up well on the island, and that is surprising for a Giants team that we really thought would struggle. He did play really, really well. Stephon Gilmore, the injury really impacts everything. Didn't necessarily play up to the level that he played as a defensive player of the year. Still a good player in his own right. It'd be interesting to watch how he comes back because he missed minicamp. And those things, he's only making $7 million on the books for the Patriots this year at, you know, the wrong side of 30. Man, do they get that deal done so he can go back and show people why he was really a defensive player of the year at corner.
And when I mentioned Denzel Ward, when I look at the Browns secondary, I mean, like, you've got a unit here that is going to contend to be one of the best, if not the best, from top to bottom in all of football. I mean, Denzel is the headliner for sure. Fourth overall pick a couple of years ago, same year that the Browns took Baker Mayfield number one. Just signed John Johnson, terrific safety in the league. We still haven't seen Grant Delpit yet, last year's second round pick, who was a highly touted safety coming out of LSU. We haven't really seen Greedy Williams yet either. He's been banged up, was second round pick in 2019. And then they take Greg Newsome in the first round this year to go along with Troy Hill, who also came over as a nickel corner from the Rams. And then Ronnie Harrison played some good ball for them, coming over in a trade from Jacksonville. MJ Stewart there as well. So, man, that's a really good, deep group there, I guess. I mean, like, I think a lot of that hinges on the type of production we get from those two LSU kids and Greedy Williams and Grant Delpit, who we just haven't seen a ton yet from because of the injuries.
No, we haven't seen a ton from them yet. They haven't had the opportunity to really get on the field. Injuries and those things have kept them from it. I think if you're a defense coordinator, Joe Wood, you have to be excited about what you have at your disposal. The dream for every defense coordinator is to be able to change on a week-to-week basis because you have so much talent and so much versatility within your ranks. The Cleveland Browns actually have that potential. When you rattled off that list of names of those guys in the secondary, plus – you think about Jadeveon Clowney joining Miles.
JOK too.
Yeah, JOK coming out. They can really hit you with a bunch of different fronts and looks and those things to make life complicated for the quarterback. This is a very, very good group and one that has enough depth that if they lose a player or two, it still shouldn't impact their chances of being a viable contender for the trophy this year.
Yeah, so I kind of used your list of the top five and then some of those honorable mention guys and looked around the rest of the league for cornerbacks. I don't know. I don't even know if you necessarily need to call them lockdown, but like their teams need them to establish themselves as a top flight corner because that's what they either drafted them or signed them to do.
Yeah.
And that defense desperately needs it. So like I'm looking at the Jaguars gave a lot of money to Shaquille Griffin, drafted CJ Henderson in the first round. They need one of those two guys, Bucky, as you know, to step up and be a true number one corner.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting thing because when you think about Shaq Griffin, you wonder, does he have the tools to be the number one, the lead horse, the lead defender in the secondary? Can he take on all comers and defend the opponent's number one receiver? And then you talk about CJ Henderson being a first round pick. They take Tyson Campbell, another top pick.
Yeah.
They have young, athletic, rangy corners to play. The thing will be, will they tailor their defense to allow them to play fast and free? Can they make it as simple as possible so their athleticism and talent can shine? That's what I want to see.
Next one I had is the Tennessee Titans, who, you know, let Adoree Jackson go, let Malcolm Butler go, needing Christian Fulton, last year's second round pick out of LSU, to step into a much bigger role, it feels like.
Ooh, Christian Fulton, man, he has a lot of work ahead of him because you know you can say what you want to about Adoree Jackson and Malcolm Butler. Those guys were fighting. Now their secondary was victimized. They gave up too many big plays. So can this be a combination of better talent in a simpler scheme? to help them, because you like to think that they will make some adstjustments to get them right. But
and you know, I mean, otherwise, you're looking at what they signed Janoris Jenkins. They have, you know, they drafted Caleb Farley, but not sure what you're going to get out of him.
So there are a lot of question marks for them in the back end. When you think about that division, Indianapolis is going to present some problems. So you want to be able to drop in the box and play one on one. You don't know what you're going to see from the Texans. Yeah. So you're trying to figure out how you're going to piecemeal your defense to fix them. And then with the Jags, the best thing they may do is be able to get it out on the perimeter, dig and dunk it, run the ball a little bit. So your guys will have to be involved in both aspects of the game.
So I'll rattle off a couple other ones here, and you can pick out which ones you want to look at. So other teams that need corners on their roster to really step into a true number one role as a corner, the Raiders, take your pick. Damon Arnett, Trayvon Mullen, somewhere they need one of those two guys to jump in. Cowboys, Trayvon Diggs, who kind of showed, some flashes of that type of ability. You've got the Washington football team signed William Jackson. Maybe need him to step into that role. You know, they've got that ferocious front. The Lions need Jeff Okuda to really step into that role. You're going to take him that high like they did a couple years ago. It's, coming off a rookie year, getting his feet wet, it's time. Vikings have seen a lot of turnover at that position the last couple of years. Xavier Rhodes, of course, gone before last year. So Jeff Gladney, number one pick or first round pick, needs to step in. Patrick Peterson, P2. I don't know if he still falls into that category, but could still certainly be a really good player for them. And then the Falcons with A.J. Terrell, who I think flashed some of that stuff last year as a number one pick rookie. So, and then, this year's rookies, Asante Samuel, Pat Surtain, we mentioned Caleb Farley. Like, those guys fit into, the hope. You're hoping at this point, but they haven't shown anything yet on the field. Those last four, Falcons, Vikings, Lions, Washington, Cowboys, Raiders, Titans, man, they need somebody to step into that role.
Yeah, I mean, there are a ton of guys and a ton of teams that need their players to step up. You mentioned at the beginning of the question about the Raiders. Here's why the Raiders should be better, Mullen and Arnett. Gus Bradley's coming in with a very simple system. They're going to play cover three behind it. They're going to do a really good job of just making it very, very simple for them to play fast and be free and to just run and hit. So that is why they have an opportunity real quickly to close ground. And then when I look at the Washington football team and William Jackson, it's not only William Jackson and the talent that he brings coming over from Cincinnati, but it's what he has playing in front of him. That front line, being able to quicken the clock in the quarterback's head, errant throws should make his players off tips and overthrows.
Yeah.
And then finally, the Minnesota Vikings, I felt like Patrick Peterson was a descending player, but then I've seen Mike Zimmer kind of do these things before where he takes a project and kind of figures it out. I'm going to go with Minnesota trying to figure it out.
With Pat Pete. Yeah.
Yeah, with Pat Pete on the perimeter.
All right. And then let's finish up this cornerback discussion with some teams that just don't have an obvious choice, right? As a number one corner. Jets fit that bill. Bless Austin, Bryce Hall. I don't know if that's the future at that position. The Bengals are an interesting one because you're using Trey Waynes as a nickelback. You paid him a lot of money. Chidobe Awuzie comes over from the Cowboys. And what how do we feel about Joe Hayden at this point of his career? The Steelers are still going to rely on him heavily based on the rest of that roster. I mean, you got Justin Lane, third round pick 2 years ago over there as well. Texans, I mean, they have – how many swings have they taken at the cornerback spot, Buck? Vernon Hargraves, Brandon Roby, or Bradley Roby, and then, it was Gary Conley, and, I mean, they were using the waiver wire trade.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know where that stands. And we talked about the Titans. The Chiefs seem to get it done without a marquee name. You could say what you want about, Rashad Fenton, Tre'Davious Ward. That's kind of who they're going to rely on. 49ers have done it without, a big name since, Sherm is no longer there or isn't there right now. And then how do the Seahawks replace Shaquille Griffin? So that's how I kind of finish out that piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, no, I think what you're having, a lot of it depends on scheme and then development of the players. When you talk about Seattle and what they need, they're going to bank on their developmental process with getting young guys ready to play. Right. If they're able to get the splash plays or disruption, that's kind of gravy. But now it's about getting the young guys up to speed so they can make plays, they can be on the field. They don't have to sit there at times with like a deer in headlights because they don't know what's going on. This gives them a chance to continue to take a major swing at it and see if they can get it right. The one team that I'm not as worried about, the Pittsburgh Steelers, because Joe Hayden is getting old, but he plays well in the small box. But this is a team that also typically wants to be a zone dog team, want to put their guys in space, let them see the quarterback and let them react to it. They do that, they're going to make a ton of plays.
Exactly. And so that's how you weigh the conversation with corners, right? You have to balance scheme, what they're asked to do, with skill set. And that's what we were talking about when we began this thing with lockdown corners. Some guys don't necessarily have that opportunity within the landscape of their scheme. So you just got to kind of take all of those things, into consideration when you're considering, ranking or having a conversation about cornerbacks, in this league and the way that defenses deploy them. All right. Hey, let's have some fun before we get out of here, because, we talked a lot back in May about DK Metcalf's run at the 100 meter back in the Golden Games, trying to earn a spot in the Olympic trials and then eventually in the Olympic team. Didn't quite work out, but man, did he acquit himself well. It's a dude who's 235 pounds running a 10.340 or 10.3 100 meter. It was just insanity. Marquise Goodwin has made an Olympic team before when he was a member of the Buffalo Bills back in 2012, made the Olympic team, missed out in 2016, and then decided this year as a new Chicago Bear, I'm going to give it a run again in the long jump in the Olympic trials. And I mean, look, while he did not make the Olympic team, I mean, for a guy who, has to train for football too, man, it's pretty impressive to run into the Olympic trials there and still be able to compete. You know what I mean, Buck?
Yeah, I think it speaks to the world-class athleticism that he has. A guy who has already made the Olympic team continues to sporadically train, and he puts himself in a position to be able to go there. It means a lot. From a scouting perspective, I love hearing these stories. I love seeing what guys
do. That's my next question.
Yeah.
How is it viewed now?
Oh, I think it's such a positive deal because it's legitimate and verified measurements.
Yeah.
The times are legitimate. If I see you run a 10.5 on the track, I know that's a legitimate time. And I have been trying to figure out the best way to do the weight room I just think it's a really unique situation when you have these guys that are world-class athletes that can run fast, they can jump high, they can do a bunch of different things. They've never fully dedicated themselves to track, but they can compete at a high level. DK Metcalf, Marquise Goodwin, they deserve to be celebrated because there are only a handful of people on the earth that can do what these guys were trying to do. I think it just makes it better when we see more football players participating in track and field.
So, and from a recruiting world, which you're, now heavily involved in with, your players as Coach Buck, and then, the guys that you see come through in the Elite 11 and the opening and all that stuff. I remember, when I was coming out, and obviously, your own personal experience as a speed demon. But when I was coming out of high school, I was a lightly recruited, player from a football perspective, but I remember being caught off guard when I'm on the phone. I think it was the head coach at the time at Stephen F. Austin, and he was calling me. He's like, "Yeah, what are you running in the 400?" And I was like, "What?" Well, because I told him, he asked me what other sports I did. I was like, "Yeah, I play soccer in the winter, and I run track in the spring." And he's like, "Oh, what do you run?" And I was like, "Well, I do the mile relay. I run the 1600." I was more of a distance guy. And so he's like, "Oh, so what's your 400 split?" And I was like, for sure, padded my time by about five seconds. Because I knew there wasn't going to be an actual time out there. Because I did not run the 400. It was a split. Yeah. And so I was like, 53. And he's like, "Yeah, that's a little slow for us." I was like, "Oh, shoot. That's about 5 seconds faster than it actually is."
No, so Rhett, what's funny is Old school scout, I learned Ozzie Newsome and Shaq Harrison, those guys at the combine. They used to just drop these nuggets and they would say, like, man, you just want to get the guy's actual track time because it would tell you everything that you need to know.
Yeah.
And so I want to say Jalen Ramsey is a guy who I already talked about him winning, but I think he launched him like 25, 26 feet, like something ridiculous,
that's
right?
Insane.
And so when you have that kind of explosiveness, you're like, oh, well, they're going to run fast. He's going to run into 4.4s.
Right. Oh,
he's,
sure.
He's going to have a vertical that jump translates. In the high 30s and those things. Like, it matters. And then when you see a guy like DK Metcalf, and there's a lot of there were a lot of people that were saying, oh, well, he learned track is real fast. But, man, 10.3? 10.3 puts you in a unique category because you're like, man, if he ran 10.3, that means his 40 time is going to be in the 4.3s-ish on an off day. And because it's verified and electronic and those things, completely different mix. And so I love seeing it. And what I will say, having run track in college while playing football, is that I believe all athletes, like, if you're a football player, you're not playing baseball or basketball, you should run track because, one, you're going to learn how to run fast. You can learn all the speed mechanics that are going to help you. But the competitiveness, the being able to get verified times and those things, it only helps. And so we talk about it, like the receiver that came out of Auburn, Schwartz.
Anthony Schwartz, yeah.
Anthony Schwartz, when he was in high school, I remember him in Florida just rolling through everything. And so then you're like, when you see him in the company, you're like, oh, this guy's going to run fast, guys. Check his background. He was a state champion.
Uh-huh.
He's going to be fine. The little corner that came from, was it Robert Rochelle? That came from smaller school.
Yeah.
He might have been at the, he was a state champion in Louisiana in the 100. It might have been 3A, but he still was a state champion. You're like, he's another one that's going to run fast. So I love it. I love seeing it. I love when we get to this time of year. And these guys are trying out for the Olympic trials because, you know, and actually the guy that made the Olympic team in the 200 meters, the 17-year-old kid.
Yes.
4-star wide receiver. I think we need to.
Really?
Yeah. Out of North Hollywood, Florida.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's
a 4-star. I think we can put a 5-star on him because regardless of whether he can catch or not, I think he'd be a 5-star.
Let's get a bonus. A little bump up, a little upgrade on your star ranking when you're going to be, you might have a medal hanging on your freaking neck.
Yeah. No, it matters. It just gives those guys a chance because even thinking about Marquise Goodwin when he was coming out of Texas, he got a handful of balls. He was okay. But then when you think about the track exploits, like, it bumps him up. Like, you just think about the speed demon.
And that's what people are like, ooh, you know, like, it's untapped potential. You know, like, we can make him a wide receiver. Like, how many discussions do you think were had around the NFL, like, you know, maybe playful or not, about Usain Bolt? Like, Can we give him a chance.
We've seen it. There's a level of there's some crossover to it. If you run really fast, you have a chance to get on the track. I'll never forget, my buddy worked in Tennessee. He was working with the Titans, where Justin Gatlin,
I was gonna say that next, yeah,
he did a quiet, like, a little under the radar workout.
Yeah.
And he said, Buck, it was so crazy that he ran and you couldn't hear anything. That's how light his feet were on the turf. And he was like, he said, it's the craziest thing. Like, it didn't even look like he was exerting any energy coming down the turf. And he was like, look, it was in the 4.3s, but you're like, wow, how fast and what it looked like. And so, I don't know. I think it's great. I think it's great if you have, like, the two-way experience, being able to be a track athlete and football, and not just as a sprinter, but as a jumper, shot. And just like last year, Tristan Wirfs was a guy who had won the state championship in either the shot and disc when he was coming out, to also go along with wrestling accolades,
right,
and all of that other stuff. So when you put those things together, typically those guys that can dominate in another sport, they also have success in our sport.
By the way, Iowa center Tyler Linderbaum is going to be one of the best offensive linemen in the country this year. There's clips floating around the internet right now of Linderbaum, like, flat backing Tristan Wirfs when they were in high school wrestling. So, you know, keep an eye on the center over for the Iowa Hawkeyes this year. Put that down in your scout's notebook.
Hey, all those things matter. So Rip, when you're scouting, you're always digging in the background. And when you see guys who have success in Olympic sports, wrestling, track and field, it really helps. It enhances that overall evaluation because a guy like Tristan Wirfs, who goes and earns all rookie honors right out the gate coming out of Iowa, where you're like, look, man, this dude was a high level athlete. And maybe we didn't even give him enough credit for his athleticism when he was coming out, because the leverage that he learned, the explosions that he displays as a shot putter, a discus thrower, it all showed up on Sundays. Yep.
Better believe it. And about 3 weeks from now, we'll get a chance to watch the Olympics get underway. And for sure, we will be watching and we will be tuning in. And we thank you guys for tuning in today here on the Move the Sticks podcast. Of course, back with more episodes next week. I, at some point, DJ will be back, I assume. I mean, we don't know. He's having a good time for himself, it sounds like. But Buck, great catching up with you. And thanks to Nabil for getting us rolling here. And we'll see you guys next week.